So the Money Lady, Terry Savage, on a Wednesday is on the Wintrust Business Lunch. TerrySavage.com for the syndicated financial columnist. I said, things are going so well, makes you think something's going wrong. Markets continue to stay strong, don't they?
Absolutely. You know, by the way, some people will remember I was supposed to be in Baltimore today with the Social Security Commissioner.
Yeah.
They postponed that till next month. I think they forgot when they made the appointment. It was right before Labor Day weekend, to tell you the truth. But anyway, we got a call saying we have to postpone this.
And that is your appointment with the Social Security Administration to help manage the business of clawbacks.
Commissioner. Yeah, we're trying. We're still working on it.
And the idea is that when people are overpaid for years, no fault of their own, then Social Security says, we've been giving you too much money. We want a lot of it back. And you want limits on that.
Let me tell you where we stand now, because this has been an ongoing big project of mine. Social Security has been in the process of clawing back $21 billion worth of what they have belatedly figured out was overpayments. Now, they came in chunks. In fact, when we wrote the book, Larry Kotlikoff and I, Social Security Horror Stories, and I was sorting through them, and I still get posts on my blog and so forth. When we were sorting through them, I realized they came in certain categories. So one category, we've already gotten help. That is people who were overpaid because by law, if they had a public service pension, teachers, fire, police, things like that, there is something called the WEP, Windfall Elimination Provision, that was enacted years ago that said, oh, you can't double dip. Now, before everybody out there gets all fired up, there is a movement to repeal that, but it won't happen until we really approach dealing with Social Security's big issues. But at any rate, what happened is I think they finally got around to saying, so they should have known. You see, they should have had systems in place, because if you get a teacher's pension, for example, you get a 1099, and all those public service pensions should have sent a copy, the IRS should have, or they should have looked at the IRS records, which Social Security could do, and say, oh no, Mrs. Smith has a teacher's pension, we'll reduce her Social Security. They forgot to do that, they didn't do that. So they started huge clawbacks and saying, and we're stopping your payments entirely. Now, if you have that kind of situation, the new Social Security Commissioner, Martin O'Malley, came out in March, pointed to the 60 Minutes piece that Larry and I did, and said, that's terrible. We will only limit the repayment demand to 10% of your check. It's still a hit, but they've stopped taking away your retirement benefit as they attempt to claw back the money they overpaid in this windfall elimination, or there's another one for government workers. So that's a big hunk. But here's what remains. The people on disability, they don't get the same 10% protection, we're finding out.
Oh.
Because what happens is they've also gone back belatedly, and I have a number of stories of people. Now, nobody's saying they got disability wrongly. Nobody is saying that they aren't still disabled today. But as they went back belatedly and matched monthly income, from even if people sent in questions and said, I'm earning this, there's a very complicated formula. Each year it changes for how much income you can have for a month before you're sort of out of compliance. And you get things like a trial work provision. I've been on the phone yesterday 3 hours with a group of attorneys who are helping people, so I'm hoping to write about that. But the fact is, if you were out of compliance, and what happened during the pandemic, a lot of disabled people do basic jobs that were really needed. They work in hospitals, maybe they do all kinds of things. They worked overtime. They were paid overtime. They didn't realize they're already disabled, and they went over the income limits. And Social Security has just gone through recently and said, as of February 2021, or even going back to 2012, we saw that you earned too much in 3 months. We are cutting you off and clawing back all the benefits we paid you since 2020 or 2014 or whatever it is. This, to a disabled person, is a horrendous disaster. And Larry and I are going to discuss with the Social Security Commissioner, first of all, reviewing those months, because there are offsets, things like work expenses and so forth, that a good attorney might be able to get them to absolutely reverse the decision. But there are also provisions about the amount they should be able to claw back from you. And the point is, they say, though, once you're off, because we took you off because you earned too much, so you're no longer on Social Security disability, then they say, well, so the 10% doesn't apply. So there's a whole lot of people, disabled people, getting clawback letters. And I think Larry and I might have found this group that's working very hard on these cases. So that's my next step, but we are going to
talk to them. Do you think the Social Security Administrator realizes this?
No, I think, I mean, Martin O'Malley's a smart guy. He got on to the first part about the take your Social Security check away and you're out on the street, kind of, you can't pay your rent. But I don't think he realizes the distinction of people being kicked off disability. Therefore, forget the 10% limitation. So that's our next big project with him. And the third big thing we want to do is limit the clawbacks in any case to 18 months. So if they go back to 2012, you're disabled, you're kicked off the rolls.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole other thing about widows and their benefits. If they were their spouse, if they died, the spouse died and was subject to a clawback. I'm buried in this stuff.
I know why they didn't keep the meeting with you today. It's not that they got vacation on Monday. It's they don't want to deal with this. This just sounds like so much.
I'm never stopping. Larry Kotlikoff and I are never, ever stopping. We're going to get this.
This listener says, thank you, Terry Savage, for caring about Social Security recipients. Thank you for capital letters doing something about it. I learned so much from you. Don't we all? Terry Savage is in our studio.
Can I? I mean, I don't know if I'm allowed to comment on our sponsors, but. So if you look at terrysavage.com on my blog, someone wrote me a question about using this kind of service. I just answered this late last night. And the let's just digress for a minute, because I know you said you met Jeff.
Yeah. Oh, I
okay. So this
talk
woman
about credible.
Said, I want to sell my home, and I'm very concerned. It's older. We haven't kept it up so much, and I'm scared of you. And I'm considering one of those services. She named him, and there, you can see this at terrysavage.com. I'm scared of knowing I'll take a cut in the value of my home, but the convenience of leaving the house as opposed to getting a dumpster. And she goes on. It was a long thing. And here's my response to her. Honestly, I'm going to say I don't know. I listen to the same commercials you do on the radio. They always make me wonder what kind of a discounted price these companies can afford to pay, since they're going to have to deal with any cleanup or repairs, et cetera, before they can resell. There's only one, this is because I hope this woman will do this. There's only one way to find out. You need to do a comparison, and I'll be very interested to hear the answers. So contact me by, everybody who gets a question answered gets an email saying your question was answered. So I said, contact me. I don't want to get involved since that could sway the numbers you get. I mean, I guess I could say, what's Jeff's phone number here? I have a lady that needs help. So I didn't want to do that. I said, your first step is to call one or both of these companies, have them come out and make you an offer. Get it in writing. And then in capital letters, I wrote, don't sign anything. Don't pay any fees up front. I don't know if they ask for that, but I'm just saying, do not be pressured. You also need to find out what price a competent realtor would list your home for. And then ask what you would receive net of commission if it's sold at that price. You can easily ask one or two realtors in your area, the ones where you see the signs on nice houses, this is what I wrote, it's on there, to come over and give you an estimate of what price they think your house will sell at. Get that in writing, but do not sign a listing agreement or anything else. Then please write back to me or call, my number's on the email, and let me know. I'd like to write about this, not using your name, of course, when I hear the results. So somebody's probably going to call.
Yeah,
I hope this lady, I don't know her first name, is going to call. I'd like to find out what's the price of convenience. I think she described her situation, and I would think that would be a wonderful thing to not have to hassle.
Oh,
if you're 25, you don't mind cleaning out your basement, but not at
70. Price of convenience is
it. Exactly.
There's a value to that.
So anyway, thanks for doing the commercial, because people need the service, and I'm going to find out anonymously what the difference would be.
Well, I can assure you that at least in his case, I talked to him and I know a little bit about his business. They're doing very well. And you're right. You're not obligated. You call them up and they say, here's the deal. If you don't like it, you don't have to utilize it.
No, I don't know. I don't know if we're allowed to talk about our sponsors, but it's an interesting concept.
Yeah, you're making me nervous as hell.
Is
but
it?
That's okay.
No, well, I like a lot of our sponsors. I mean, I love Kerry Peck. You know, I send people to him, Ray Kaplan. And this seems like I'm just dying to find out.
Yeah, I am too. Well, I like her chances. You ready to take some calls from
Absolutely.
Listeners? Absolutely. We haven't even talked about the markets, although generally they're doing pretty well. But we've got five lines of calls here, so let's pick up a couple of phones. We'll start with Jan on line two. You're on WGN. Jan, what can we do for you?
Hi. My daughter has $40,000 to invest somehow. She doesn't need it and wants to make the most interest that she can. Should she do it now? Should she wait until after the Feds change interest rates?
How old is she?
How should she do that?
How old is she?
She's 28.
Oh, that makes it. Thank you for asking the critical question.
This is so much more fun now.
Yes, right. Because is she working?
Yes.
Does she have a retirement plan at work?
I don't know.
Okay, so we want to grab every 28-year-old and say two things. First of all, three things. First of all, don't be in debt. Sounds like if she had credit card debt, she'd know to pay off that 26, 27% credit card debt. Number two, we want to say to a 28-year-old, you need to be making a contribution to a retirement plan. You need to let it grow in the stock market. It'll be up or down, but you've got 50 years before you're going to have to worry about it. And time is money. So if your boss doesn't give you the chance to have a deductible 401k, she should open an individual retirement account.
An IRA.
An IRA. She could put $7,000 in. And the way to do that is go to Fidelity or Vanguard and just say, I'm going to put in $500 a month for a few months, and I'll buy that Standard & Poor 500 stock index fund. Now, that won't stop up. How much money was that?
$40,000.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And how, but do I dare
and
ask?
She will eventually need it. I mean, she's going to school right now. In 2 years, she'll be done. And she'll eventually going to buy a house or
does
whatever.
Does she have student debt?
She will eventually
need
it.
Does she have a student loan?
No.
Oh, well. Boy, this gal's in a wonderful position. So
does she want to meet my son? Sorry.
That used to be my line when man would call in. Where will I put all my money? Are you married? without knowing a lot more about her, if she's earning up to $7,000, she could put that in an IRA. The rest of the money, if she wants to keep it safe, she should put it in Treasury bills. Go to terrysavage.com. There's an article called How to Buy T-Bills, 6-month Treasury bills. It's not what I would really typically recommend for a young gal, but it'll keep it liquid and safe and earning the best interest rate until she decides after college whether she's going to move or buy something. But for sure, every year she works, she should put the money into an individual retirement account by the Standard & Poor 500 stocks index
fund. But that only accommodates 7,000.
And never look back.
That only accommodates 7,000.
Right, but so we're getting to the end of this year, and if she's going to work and make at least 7,000 next year, that would be another 7,000. So that's what she should be doing.
Okay, $7,000 a year you can put in on an IRA.
Exactly, and get a tax deduction too. But only if she has that money from earned income. It doesn't care where the money came from. She got an inheritance or something, but she must have earned at least $7,000 to contribute $7,000.
Jan, if you want to have your daughter listen to this conversation, it will be posted as a podcast at WGNradio.com. After the show, I recommend she listens to Terry's advice. This is Paul. You're on WGN with Terry Savage. Hi, Paul.
Oh, hi, Paul. Hey, Terry, I got a question for you, but before I give you my question, I just have an insider thought. I just want to get your feedback on this. You know, I'm starting to realize, like, I'm single. I don't really have a family at all. It's kind of a long story. But people who are kind of living total solo almost have to be more chicken with their money, it seems like, because they don't have safety nets. Like I've always just gone with CDs and because I want zero risk, but I'm starting to realize that not having a family affects people more than just emotionally. I mean, it prevents people from branching out and growing their money.
Yep. Not only did he just click out, the entire bank of phones just clicked out. I think if we pull up the next screen,
but if we're
Pete,
still on the
you'll
air,
be able to. No,
Paul
we're doing fine. Well,
okay.
But let's address that.
This is a big issue.
Like you're a single person, you have high risk tolerance. You ought to be able to
No. This is really interesting. There's two kinds of risks. There's the, you know, you can do financial planning and say, okay, now I've got a pension, I've got Social Security, and I'm getting older, but I have enough money coming in, and I live in a one-bedroom apartment because why do I need a mansion kind of a thing. But there are other things that come into play, and particularly this is a man calling in, but older women know this especially. There's some kind of community of things that you miss if you are really living on your own. And it happens to women tend to outlive men. You need someone. The first question is, who do I call at 3 in the morning if I think I'm going to call 911? Who will come to the hospital with me at 3 in the morning? Is it my next-door neighbor who's younger, the nice gal that lives next door? Is it my sister who's as old as I am and lives across the country? So you have the support and emotional issues for being alone, and then you have things like, but what will happen to my money if I can't handle it? So you need an estate plan. You need an estate planning attorney who's younger and someone who will act as trustee for you if you're incapacitated. It becomes a whole host of different financial planning issues and emotional support issues if you're alone. Are you still there, Paul?
No, he's not. But Let's move on to this text question. I have a mortgage on my home. My husband recently passed away. Should I pay off my mortgage?
Well, first of all, it depends on about a dozen different things. Number one, what's your mortgage rate? Is it down at 3.5%? Don't pay it off. I assume you got some life insurance. The question is, are you going to stay in your home now that your husband passed away? And you shouldn't make that decision immediately. This is where you need, I want to say this again, it's not a do this or do that question. It's a let's examine the big picture of how your life has changed, not only financially, but emotionally, where you might want to go or live and how you want to live. And that's why you need someone you can trust. I have this whole big thing about financial planners because so many of them are really just trying to sell you a product or service. You need a fiduciary. That word is getting to be a little overused. So I combine that with fee only, not someone who makes commissions on trying to win a trip to Hawaii based on selling you an annuity. My good friend, now really good friend, Pam Kruger, created WealthRamp as like a match.com for carefully selected fee-only fiduciary advisors. The link is right up on the top right of my website. I get absolutely nothing out of it. But everybody, practically without exception, has said, oh, that really worked out. Thank you. I get thank you notes. Thanks for connecting me. But she has lots of them in the Chicago, in our listening area.
But do you think that paying into, I get it, if it's below 4%, that's...
I can't give advice to a widow who probably got life insurance and says to me now, yeah, I think I want to stay here. I don't know what other obligations she has. I don't know anything about her life. In general, I would say if you have a low mortgage rate, and it's below 4%, you would hang on to it.
But don't you think you should also consider the house you're living in as an appreciable asset?
It is. And it'll appreciate with or without a mortgage.
Yeah, I guess so. Sure. Okay.
Next call.
More of your calls, 312-981-7200. Cynthia, you're on the air. What can we do for you? Cynthia's making her turn. Cynthia, breaker. You there?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Cynthia, talk to us. What's your question?
My question is, I started drawing Social Security at 62. My husband didn't qualify for Social Security, so when I went on Medicare at 65, I found out that my husband should have come under my work record and stopped paying into Part A Medicare. I filed a claim with Social Security, and they only backpaid us 3 months instead of like over 3 years.
Woo! I can't even figure out that. That's a question that I can't even sort out because it's so complex. There must have been some disability involved or something like that. I'm not quite sure about your circumstance, but I'll tell you what. If you will post that question on my Ask Terry blog at terrysavage.com, put a few details in, include your phone number, but I will post that, of course.
Does Social Security entertain that sort of thing, though?
I don't understand that question at all. I'm going to say that.
Well, I think I don't do if she's been...
No.
Okay, fine.
That's too complex. There's
Cynthia,
something wrong with that.
Thank you for the call. This is, let's go to Marie. You're on WGN. Marie, what can we do for you?
Hello. Terry, I was wondering, when you do speak to Social Security, are you going to bring up the GPO? I know you mentioned the WEP.
Yeah, I thought about throwing in the initials GPO, and I thought that sounds like alphabet soup. That's a government pension offset. It's look, let me divide Social Security's issues real simply, draw a line down the middle. One issue is how messed up they are, the clawbacks they're issuing, the lack of due process, the lack of explanations and so forth, and the plain old cruelty which goes against the statute. That's the part Larry Kotlikoff and I are working on now, these $21 billion, so that's a lot of old people and disabled people that are getting attacked by Social Security. The other half on the other side of this line is called, after this election, no matter who wins, we all have a very short window for dealing with the basic liabilities of Social Security. And there will be some changes because we cannot let the system collapse. Among the changes that will be discussed are raising the wage cap, taxing more of Social Security benefits, perhaps if you're in a higher bracket, dealing with these offsets, the GPO and the WEP. Nothing will get done until we have a Congress that is either scared enough or there's enough leadership at the top of this country to drag everybody to the table and say, as they did in the early 80s, we need to fix this. So I'm not into that yet. I'm just trying to get the abuses fixed for the people who are currently being abused by the system.
Sorry that it's not more timely for some people that want that fixed sooner
exactly,
than later.
Yes.
What's the maximum annual income you can have and still be eligible to contribute to a Roth IRA? Is that at your fingertips?
I'm going to look for it.
Okay. Do that. Now, can I ask you another question while you're typing? Can you do both?
I do lots of things.
My husband just sold this Corvette, and I've got $40,000 of chicken money. My husband just sold this Corvette, and I've got...
Wait a second.
I think your husband has $40,000 worth of chicken money. Where would you recommend putting it short term? $40,000, they just
sold
their
car.
Yeah.
I just call your bank and put it in a money market deposit account. You should get at least 4.5%. I love that you got the money.
Well,
have you guys agreed on what's happening next?
That's true. It says my husband just sold his Corvette, and
I've got the money.
$40,000.
Yeah. I just like to be at your dinner table, but for the moment, put it in a money market account at the bank. In 2024, the maximum income for a Roth IRA is $161,000 for single filers, $240,000 for married couples filing jointly. This is modified adjusted gross income. If your MAGI is below these amounts, you can contribute to a Roth. You may be able to contribute a little bit to a Roth as above those limits, but it phases out.
And what's the number again?
It's $161,000 in 2024 for single filers, $240,000 for married couples filing jointly.
Somebody said, I've got a Parent Plus loan, and I've got a question about it. We'll pick it up here in just a minute. 312-981-7200 with Terry Savage for your calls and your text messages. Here's more business news right now with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Revival Food Hall in Chicago is being rebranded. The new name moving forward is the Sterling Food Hall. According to Cranes, the new owner wants to pay homage to the silver and monetary ties of the National Building where it's located at 125 South Clark. The building was initially designed for Commercial National Bank. An Atlanta-based company took over Revival last month, right after Chicago-based 16 on Center abruptly announced the food hall's closure. The new owner has promised a refresh with a focus on lounging and cocktails. There are 13 current vendors at the location. Lyft is launching a pilot program for rider verification next month in Chicago. The process will work by cross-referencing rider information with third-party data sources to confirm that the person requesting a ride is who they claim to be. Riders who aren't automatically verified will be asked to upload a government-issued ID like a driver's license. Lyft says rider verification is an important step in the company's work to help everyone feel more secure and increase accountability. It'll begin in Chicago on September 4th. 8 other markets were selected as well. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thank you, sir. Now that business of food with you, Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And you know, a year or so ago when food inflation was really bad, we beat up on eggs a lot, didn't we? You might say we were shell-shocked at the high prices. No? Well, anyway, inflation eased with eggs leading the way down. But have you noticed? Here we go again. Egg prices are no joke.
And what we have seen is wholesale prices that we're about $2.57 in July for the New York egg price that we track, going up to about $4.14 yesterday.
Yeah, this time last year, eggs were about $1.20 a dozen at the wholesale level. What's up with the higher prices?
Supplies of eggs for immediate sale are very, very tight.
Why that is, after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today, there's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, why have egg prices doubled in the past month and are more than triple what they were a year ago? It's the S word.
We are, again, looking at very tight supplies. On July 1st, there were about 305 million table egg-laying birds, compared to previous year when there were about 313 million.
And the reason there are fewer hens laying eggs is the bird flu. USDA livestock analyst Shale Shagan says he expects the flock will rebuild, and
we would expect to see egg prices decline as we move into 2025 with the increased production.
That's if the bird flu doesn't flare up again. Meanwhile, the tiny bit of good news here is that a lot of stores are dangling eggs to get your attention.
Many stores, retailers will opt to offer eggs on special at below the cost of wholesale to bring people in to buy other items in the stores.
On the food calendar, it is not National Egg Day. That was in June, but you do need eggs to celebrate National... Can you help me out on this, Julian?
French in France, it is said as peau de crème. Peau has a silent T. Peau de crème, you could say it in English.
Oh, okay. It's also National Peach Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Terry Savage takes your calls in 60 seconds. Lots of us are talking about and worrying about and caring for mom and dad, grandma and grandpa. For all of us, here to help is Kerry Peck. You may have heard him on this radio show a little while ago. The premier elder law attorney in Illinois who's written books about the rights seniors have and has helped our legislature draft laws that protect elder rights and assets. It gets so complicated. Kerry, by the way, was just named the legal education partner for the Illinois Alzheimer's Association. Kerry and his team will be providing much-needed legal education and resources for families impacted by Alzheimer's and dementia. Do you and your family have questions or need help? Call Peck Ritchie. Maybe you just need to draft or update a will or an estate plan. Call Peck Ritchie. That initial consultation is free, and these issues only get more complicated and expensive and exasperating with time. So right now, 312-201-0900, 312-201-0900. Click on PeckRitchie.com now. Ready, Terry Savage?
I am ready.
This listener says, what happens to the wife who has small Social Security income, and the husband has a larger benefit, but he's deferring to age 70 and then dies at 69. Can the wife still draw his SSI?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember this rule. The wife, the widow gets his, I'm trying to remember whether she gets his benefit at full retirement age or his benefit that he was drawing that he would have gotten at age 69. I want you to go to maximizemysocialsecurity.com and put in your numbers and his numbers, and they will give you the absolute best claiming strategy, assuming the choice is still to be made.
But don't you get half of whatever that number is, or do you get
the
full?
No, you get, the widow will get the full benefit, but I get confused on this all the time, so I have a note on my computer. Whether it's his full retirement benefit, I believe it's what he would have been withdrawing had he claimed it at age 69.
Terry, can you buy long-term care insurance in your IRA without withdrawing from the IRA and paying income taxes on it? That's
no.
Clever.
No. Yeah, that we did a story about buying an annuity inside your IRA to lock in the money to pay. But when you take that money out to actually pay the premium, that money will be considered ordinary income.
Ask Terry, when I start taking Social Security income after full retirement, is there a cap on the amount of income? Boy, we've had this before. I can earn from a job.
No, earn as much as you want.
No, but I think that's not the right answer.
Stop.
Because they will penalize your Social Security.
No, they won't penalize. Let's get this clear. If you take Social Security before full retirement age and you earn above a certain limit, they will reduce your Social Security benefits. more dollar for dollar, two for one in the year before you retire fully.
Isn't that what
before
I was
before you reach wait, wait, wait. Right, no, there's right. two separate things.
I'll shut up.
And by the way, they don't tell you this, but even if you did go back to work and earn some money and they reduce your benefits, you're going to get it back in the formula once you do reach full retirement age. However, once you take Social Security after full retirement age, you can earn a fortune, a portion over a certain limit of your income. A portion, 85% of those benefits will be taxed as ordinary income, but they don't reduce your Social Security benefit. So if you have a great job and you're taking Social Security, let's say you're 72, you waited to take Social Security to get the max at age 70, you've still got a great salary job, yes, work as hard as you can, make as much money as you can.
But aren't you
save
saying
as much, and your Social Security benefit check, 85% of it will be taxed at that point.
But is there a threshold at which
yes.
that happens?
Yeah, that's
okay,
one
but
of those
that's
numbers.
A distinction without a great difference. Then
no,
you're saying
it's
they're not going to reduce it, but they're going to tax you on
John,
it, so you get less in your pocket.
We pride ourselves in accuracy. They will tax your benefits over a certain income. Once you've reached full retirement
yes,
age.
Yes, ma'am.
They reduce your benefit check when you have income before your before full retirement age. So your Social Security check is reduced, but you get your full benefit, including all that delayed credits for waiting till you're 70, and then you include 85% of that above a certain level, which I have to look up every time because it changes every year.
I'm a small business owner with an LLC. Should I contribute to SS? Oh, that's interesting. That for themselves, then, in other words? I'm a small business owner with a limited liability corporation. Should I contribute to Social Security?
You have to contribute.
You have no choice.
About FICA tax. Talk to your accountant immediately.
That you're asking this question may mean you're in trouble. I have 60 seconds left. Bob, can we help you? You're on WGN. Hi.
How you doing? Thank you for taking my call, but I'm afraid I got more to say than what your time allows. We bought a home. We took an IRA money and paid the home off. And the following year, in other words, we bought it in 23. This year in 24, they took my wife's Social Security and took $438 a month.
Okay, I know what happened to you. Your Medicare Part B premium went up because your income was so high because you withdrew money from your IRA. It was a dumb move. That's why you need a financial planner. By the way, your Social Security income becomes taxable, your Social Security, between $25,000 and $34,000. You may have to pay tax on up to half of your benefits. Over $34,000, up to 85% of your benefits may be taxable. That doesn't mean you should stop working. Taxes are the privilege you pay for
earning a lot
threshold.
Of money. I mean, that would be a lot
threshold.
Of people. So in other words, count on it.
Guess what? Right. Taxes are a disincentive always to work. Taxes slow the economy. They provide good things what we want, defense, other kinds of benefits. It's always a trade-off. But the number one rule is keep working as long as you can, delay taking Social Security as long as you can, and get a competent financial advisor who understands all of that.
Read Terry Savage at terrysavage.com, the money lady. It's always good to have her in the studio. Thanks for coming by today.
Thanks, John.